Part 1. Divi.
Chapter 1. Forest. Everything that late spring morning began as usual, until Claire and I exited the house. The 2 cups of strong coffee I downed hadn't been enough. While I was breathing in fresh sea air and soaking up California sun, Claire was talking. Only half awake, I missed her question. "Sorry, love, what's that you said?" "Oh, I was just wondering if Vicky Rodriguez is still after you, that's all." What an odd thing for her to say. Her grin and jaunty wave as she drove off was reassuring, but I was perplexed. In our 12 years of marriage, I couldn't remember her ever having made a remark like that. Vicky, coquettish as she was inclined to be, was a colleague and a longtime good friend of mine, and that was it, as Claire knew well. Truth told, I'd seen little this past year of Santa Lucia's new DA, caught up as she must be with her demanding job. Something had prompted Claire's unexpected comment, but seemingly nothing I needed to be concerned about. My spouse was not oblique. If she was worried, she'd tell me. With a busy day ahead, my mind jumped to other things as I bent to get into my little Mustang and head for work. Our 9-year-old twins waved at me as I drove by the corner, where they waited with several friends for their school bus. "Forrest," our receptionist and office manager announced as I came in, "you asked me to remind you about your appointment with Pedro Romero at 3 this afternoon." I nodded. "Thanks, Cheryl," I said. "What would we do without you to keep us all on track?" Not so long ago, there were 3 of us in my law office: Ben, Marta, and me. Since Garrett Austin joined me in the firm and Ben became a partner, we'd somehow grown to 7, including 2 assistants and a paralegal. I still had doubts about whether we needed all that help. How different our new offices were from those I'd occupied for years. They seemed sterile and impersonal when compared with the warmth and exotic style that my once friend and legal secretary, Marta, gave to our old suite. In place of beautiful ceramic tile floors of Mexican design, with colorful handmade throw rugs, we had thick carpets of the same neutral tone in every room. More durable and easier to clean, Cheryl claimed. Nothing festooned our white plastic-looking walls other than certificates no one needed to see, and a few prints. How I missed Marta, who made our place feel like a home, temperamental though she could be at times. Not a word from her since the Martinez trial over a year ago. I missed our banter, and I missed breathing in the smell of Santa Lucia's finest coffee each time I went to work. Cheryl Bloomfield, 50-ish and single, to whom we had consigned the fitting out and decoration of our new digs, was utilitarian by disposition, more than an artist. Law offices, she informed us when Garrett, Ben, and I had come to see what she'd done, should look official and impressive. The dismay I felt was mirrored on my colleagues' faces, but what was done was done. We mistakenly left the task entirely to her, the 3 of us preoccupied with organizational and administrative aspects of the new firm. Though she lacked the flair and warmth that I'd grown used to, Cheryl was cordial and efficient and did keep our busy office running smoothly. One positive change with our new arrangement was the absence of constant feuding between Marta and Ben. I waved hello to our assistants, Nancy and Josephine, as I headed for my partner Garrett's door.
"So, Forrest, how was your weekend? More relaxed than mine, I hope. Jane and her husband with their brood flew in to visit us for a week. Noisy kids. 2, 4, and 6. Can you believe it? They left yesterday, thank God. They almost drove me nuts."
I grinned as I took a chair across from him.
"You keep complaining that they never come."
"Yeah, well, shoot me if you hear me say that again. I do miss our 2 kids, but I wish they'd leave their little ones at home. Not much of a grandfather, am I? So, how'd your weekend go?"
"Spent Saturday and Sunday ferrying Trina and Andy around. Seems like that's all I did."
Garrett grinned.
"Hate to tell you, those twins of yours, you're only seeing the beginning."
"That's good to know," I said. "Hey, listen, I meant to tell you last Friday, but you'd gone home. I got a call from the DA's office. Vicky's willing to deal if Jackson will name the other kid."
Garrett, who'd been with me for just over a year after leaving the DA's office and switching to criminal defense,
had a blank expression on his long face.
Other kid? What kid?
Nodding, I said, Oh yeah, that's right. You may not know much about this. Ben and I have been handling it. Jackson's just a kid. He held up a liquor store out on the avenue, he and a friend of his. The cops nabbed him just outside the store. The other guy, who's unidentified for the moment, got away. Surprise in his tone and on his face, Garrett said.
And we've got this kind of case? Why us? There's something about our finances I should know about?
I shook my head. No, no, nothing like that. Parents are old friends of mine. You probably know the father, the owner of Jackson Motors.
Who, the Porsche and Lamborghini guy? That the one?
The same, I said. It's rather complicated.
So,
Garrett mused, the hint of a smile forming on his lips.
Let's see if I get this right. The parents who aren't starving, shall we say, go their son's bail and are willing to pay big bucks to get the best deal for their kid they can. How am I doing so far?
My partner was not so subtly reminding me that the Spencer Austin criminal law firm was no longer involved with small-time cases like these, well-heeled backers notwithstanding.
Would it be presumptuous on my part, Garrett chided, to suggest that the friend you're talking about is female?
As though the idea had just struck him, he snapped his fingers in the air.
Ah, yes, I know the one. I saw her at the annual charity ball last year, didn't I? You danced with her once or twice, if I recall.
Still grinning, he added.
A little old for you, I'd say, but attractive nonetheless. It's her son we're dealing with here, correct?
Impatient to get on with things, I said, Garrett, look, I knew Lucy way back when. I was born 6 months before she was, by the way. Not that her age has anything to do with this. Frankly, I took the case because I like the boy. He's a real good kid, 18 now, I think. I haven't a clue what's gotten into him. I was his soccer coach before the twins were born. Alex is likable and polite. I just don't know. Claire and I used to have dinner at their place at least once a year, maybe more. Pete loves to barbecue. Alex was almost always there. Lucy and Pete were desperate. They came to see me about a week ago. Sorry, but there was no way I could turn them down.
Garrett, looking more serious, nodded. Of course not. I'd have done the same. So, what are we up against?
Could be worse under the circumstances, I said. It wasn't loaded, as it turned out, but Alex's buddy had a gun. They left the liquor store with $236 from the till. Both kids were wearing masks.
Previous convictions?
Thank goodness, none. Vicky's willing to soft-pedal it if Alex gives up his buddy's name so she can charge him. So far, he's holding out. It's his best friend, as everybody knows. No way the guy will let Alex take the fall. It'll be over by tomorrow. Hell of it is, both guys are well-liked and doing well in their final year at Santa Lucia High and are holding down part-time jobs. So what would make them do a stupid thing like this? Makes no sense.
Tapping his fingers on his desk, Garrett said, Not good, but sounds like things will probably work out all right. Say hello to Claire and your little ones. Not so little anymore, I guess.
Nope, not so little anymore, but hey, according to a good friend of mine, it'll be easy sledding from here on out.
Garrett laughed, and I got up to go.
Forrest, Cheryl said as I passed her desk, there's a call for you. Do you want to take it? Depends on who it is. I'm going to be with Ben for a few minutes. Can I call them back? It's Pete Jackson. It sounds important. I'll take it in my office, thanks.
Good news.
Alex's buddy had broken down over the weekend and confessed. From what Vicky told Pete, she was going to recommend leniency for both boys given their clean background and suggest probation and community service for the two. Ben also knew the Jacksons and would be relieved to know. Motioning to a chair as I entered his office, Ben said,
So, boyo, how are things in Spencerville these days? Had a good weekend?
I nodded and looked back at my friend while moving a stack of papers to find a seat. Close to 50, nearly bald with closely cropped gray hair along the sides, Ben had a chiseled, careworn face with little attention to aesthetics. His nose was beaked and overlarge, and his mouth a hard, thin line. 5'9", slightly overweight, he had dark brown eyes that reflected the hard life he'd led.
His office was different from the old one in just about every way, but at least the occupant hadn't changed. In place of his erstwhile bare walls, his beat-up desk and rickety wooden chairs, the firm's private investigator and now new full partner's quarters were as well appointed as any room on our floor. Apart from state-of-the-art computerized equipment everywhere, his desk in structure, anyway, looked like something out of a futuristic magazine. A smoke-eating fan whirred quietly in the ceiling. The furnishings were new, but not Ben's style. On every surface I could see were printouts, pamphlets of every sort and notes that dated back to God knew when. Though clean as always, Ben's clothes looked like he'd slept in them for several nights. "My weekend? The usual thing," I said. "Cooking and carting kids around. Claire was tied up at the hospital all weekend." "That's still happening then?" "Enough. Her life as a pediatric surgeon, what can I say? I came in to tell you that things are looking up for the Jackson boy."
"Oh yeah? How so?"
I told him about my telephone call with Pete.
"Good to hear. Sounds like Vicky's been flexible for once. Not bad for a beginner."
I agreed. Next morning, moments after I arrived, Garrett tapped at my office door. He didn't look very happy.
"Forrest," he said, laying a small manila envelope on my desk. "I did my best to dodge this, but the pressure at home, it was getting a bit intense."
I was intrigued. At home meant Barb, Garrett's wife, who disliked being involved with anything her husband did at work. My friend's hound dog-like face looked longer than usual.
"Gracie. You know who Gracie is? Barb's sister, right? The one who lives here in Santa Lucia. So Barb gets this phone call. Gracie thinks she knows where Divinity is."
Garrett must have seen the incredulity on my face.
Yeah, I know," he said, shaking his head. "It's crazy and sad at the same time. Every month or so, Gracie comes up with a new idea about where her daughter is. Most times it's visions, messages from God, Gracie says, about where to find her. Different angle this time."
Pointing at the envelope, he continued,
"Take a look. Somebody in Georgia sent her the picture in an email that Gracie made a copy of."
I picked up the envelope and took out a photo that wasn't very clear, probably taken by a low-end cell phone. The picture was of a child who was speaking to another girl, whose face was partially cut off. The two were sitting on a small bench of the kind I'd seen on school playgrounds. There was definitely a resemblance between the little girl in the photograph and Divinity Parker, whom I'd met several times. She'd been a playmate of my daughter. There was a resemblance, yes, but that was all. Garrett added,
"Barb says the lady who took the photo told Gracie in her email that she was sure she'd seen a picture of the girl on a TV program on missing kids. Naturally, Gracie's dead sure it's her."
"Boy, Garrett, I don't know. There's a similarity between the two, that's true. But the picture's fuzzy and there's some differences between the two girls, I think. Did Gracie contact the police and the FBI?"
"Seems so, but according to her, she got no response. They told her they'd gotten thousands of leads like that since Divinity's disappearance."
Garrett shook his head.
"I doubt it's her. You could find hundreds of little girls in the country who look more like Divinity than that picture does."
I agreed. The more I scrutinized the out-of-focus photograph, the less convinced I was. "God knows," I said. "I sympathize with Gracie, but..."
"Yeah, me too. It's been a year and a half, hasn't it?"
"You said that Barb's been giving you some static about this. What does she expect you to do?" Without answering my question, he said,
"You know how Barb can be."
Indeed, I did. Obstinate with tunnel vision.
"Gracie's been giving her a real bad time, appealing to her conscience and all that. It's got to be family who looks into this," she says. "She doesn't trust anybody else, Gracie, I mean. I don't know if you know this, no reason you should, but Gracie finally got Johnny's life insurance. 500,000, Barb says. Gracie's ready to spend every penny to get her daughter back. I'd hate to see some unethical operators take her money when there's so little chance of ever seeing the poor kid again."
I nodded. In all likelihood, that's exactly what would happen.
Garrett's face took on a puzzled look. Barb said a funny thing when telling me about her sister's money. I don't know quite what to make of it.
Yeah, what's that?
She was kind of talking to herself when she said it, so I don't know really how much it means.
So, what did she say?
I'll tell you exactly what she said. I remember because I was quite surprised. She said, "Can't figure Gracie out. Why would she go and spend all that money for a kid she didn't like?"
"Didn't like?" I echoed.
"That's what Barb said. You gotta remember, Forrest. Those two, Barb and Gracie, I mean, they didn't see each other much. Fact is, they hardly ever spoke except on holidays and Divinity's birthday. You knew that, right?"
I nodded.
"Barb never talked about her niece. She didn't like the way Gracie raised her. That much I know. Something else Barb said that I found kinda odd. She was over there quite a lot after Johnny died, to help Gracie out and all. Then Barb mentioned it again the other day. Gracie was shaken up pretty bad. Who wouldn't be? First her daughter, then her husband. What Barb found kinda strange was that her sister hardly ever talked about losing her little girl. It was Johnny she was always going on about, at least that's what Barb says. You make any sense out of all of that?"
I thought about what my friend had said. It would have been the reverse for me. If Trina disappeared, as Divinity Parker had, and then Claire died, though I loved my wife very much, it would have been the loss of my precious child that would have done me in. I shook my head. "I can't relate," I said. "We only saw Divinity a half a dozen times, almost never with her mother. If Divinity didn't get along with her very well, she didn't say so, not to us anyway. People show grief in different ways. If Gracie continues to talk about her daughter as Barb says, and if she's willing to go all out to find her even if the chances aren't very good, sounds like she's still grieving for Divinity and misses her. Don't you agree?"
"Yeah, I do. Gracie's a funny bird anyway. Trying to figure her out's a waste of time. To get back to what I was saying, I told Barb that we're no private detective agency. We're not set up to look into things like this. There's not a damn thing we can do," I told her. Well, not exactly in those words. Not hardly, I thought. Not to straight-laced Barb. "She just doesn't get the picture. Since it's my niece," she says, "I have an obligation to do something." "Do you think so? I mean, if Divinity were related to you, what would you do? If Claire wanted you to do something, like what Barb and Gracie are asking me to do, what would you say?"
What to tell my friend, who was clearly in some distress? If the FBI, with all their resources, hadn't been able to find a trace of the missing child, what could a criminal law firm like ours do? Improbable that the photo was of Divinity anyway. With the image of my own daughter in my mind, it gave me chills every time I thought of what could have happened to that little girl. Unlikely to say the least, but what if it really was Divinity in that photograph? What if it was her, and Gracie's child was never found because Garrett and I had refused to act? How much was Gracie asking of us, after all? "I guess I'd do my best to find out who's in that picture," I said. Garrett's tension seemed to drain away. He let out a long breath.
"I can't thank you enough for saying that, believe me. The hell of it is, the chances of it being her are, what, 10,000 to one? Still, if I found out years later that it was Divinity and I hadn't done anything..."
I nodded. "Well," I said, "they're not exactly asking us to shut down the shop here, are they? If we take this on, though, we'll need to get some help. I don't know a thing about work like this."
"Me neither."
"And it's not exactly the kind of work Ben does. Best thing to do is get him in here and find out what he says. He may not want to touch it since he doesn't do work like this. We'll have to see."
"If he doesn't want to do it, at least I can say I tried."
Garrett looked rather sheepish.
"Tell me something, Forrest. You ever meet Gracie Parker?"
I never had and said so. I wondered why Garrett asked. Hesitating, he said,
"She can be a little brusque sometimes. Not the easiest lady to get along with."
I waited.
"I feel a whole lot better now that I've talked to you about all this, especially since she'll be paying us a visit this afternoon. Cheryl told her that we were booked up, but it made no difference. Gracie said she'd be at our office at 2 on the dot and she'd see me then."
A grin flitted across Garrett's face.
Cheryl wasn't happy, I can tell you. Me neither, come to that. I'm not looking forward to that meeting.
2 o'clock this afternoon, you said? Garrett, I'm not sure that's going to work. Ben's not due in till after lunch. He's still down in L.A., remember? There's a good chance he won't be here by 2. Garrett's face fell.
Don't suppose you could get him on his cell to speed things up?
I had to laugh. Your sister-in-law sounds like a piece of work. I'll call and see what I can do, but you know Ben. He doesn't like being rushed. He may not be in the best mood when he gets here.
You're not telling me anything I don't know. I just hope this is one of Gracie's better days. She's really a decent sort. See what you can do with Ben.
I'll try to reach him, but I won't discuss this on the phone. He'll just tell me we're crazy, and he'd prefer not to be involved.
Right, I understand, Garrett said, standing up to go. Whatever we end up doing, thanks for your support.
Hey, I said with enthusiasm I didn't feel. It'll be something new.
You've gotta be kidding me,
was Ben's response when, at 10 to 2, he sat down in my office across from me.
We're supposed to be looking for the Parker girl? Us? Here? No way! Why get the lady's hopes up for something that's never gonna happen? Makes no sense.
I'd given him the photo in Garrett's envelope.
Could be any little girl who's got dark hair.
I agree. The chances of this turning out to be anything are pretty slim. Any ideas about who we could contact to give us a hand with this? Ben looked at me askance. From the scowl on his face and his body language, I concluded that he wanted nothing to do with the project we had in mind.
What's the matter? You guys think I couldn't handle something like this?
He cut me off before I could object.
I don't have experience looking for kids, not directly anyway. That's a fact. Doesn't mean I couldn't help. We'd have to get in some other people who know their way around and stuff like this. You know that, right?
Absolutely, I said. I'm sorry if I misinterpreted you. You didn't look exactly enthusiastic.
Hell no, I'm not. I think it'll be a big waste of time, and it'll cost a chunk. These kinds of investigations can get complicated.
Gracie Parker's due here in 5 minutes. Can you join Garrett and me then? We'll be meeting in the conference room.
Christ, Forrest. You don't give a guy a lot of time. 5 minutes, you said? Let's go.
With the exception of 2 large windows and some paintings by local artists whose work I didn't like, the walls of our plush little conference room were lined with shelves of dog-eared journals and law books. Someone with taste had selected the rectangular oak table, 6 cushioned chairs and a Turkish rug that went beneath. The lighting, too, was nice, soft and indirect. We had a whiteboard at the far end of the room. Ben, characteristically chewing on a pencil, looked bored while Garrett, who sat across from him, looked apprehensive. I sat near them at the end of the table closest to the door. No folders at each place, no notes, just 3 guys wishing they were somewhere else. Normally, Cheryl tapped on the door, then came in with our visitors to announce them. Not this time. We watched, taken somewhat off guard, as a tall, imposing woman in her early 40s walked in. I could hear Cheryl somewhere outside our room sputtering protests at this breach of protocol. Our visitor, who could only be Gracie Parker, authoritatively closed the door and strode to the far end of the table close to the whiteboard. In a stance that would have gotten her high marks in the military, she turned, scowling down at us. Garrett flinched, and Ben's eyebrows came together, an inauspicious start. The lady had come prepared for trouble. Nearly 6 feet, lean and straight up and down, her body was like a taut spring. She looked formidable in her conservatively cut dark dress. In sharp contrast with her long, flat-chested body, her face was on the edge of pretty, oval with abundant tresses of wavy dark brown hair falling past her shoulders. From the neck up, Gracie looked much like Barb, including those piercing dark blue eyes. For the moment, they were turned on Garrett.
Well, she demanded, did you do what my sister said? Have you found my divvy?
Garrett didn't move while Ben's expression turned hard. He had little patience for outspoken women. In a calm voice that didn't match the beleaguered look on his long face, Garrett said,
Gracie, why don't you take a seat? I'd like to introduce you to my colleagues here.
Curtly, she replied,
I'd rather stand. What have you done about my picture?
I could see it in Ben's eyes before the explosion came. My longtime friend had a short fuse in situations he didn't like. Had he been an employee instead of one of the three partners in our firm, he would have held his tongue, initially at least. Bending forward, his hands flat on the table, his eyes boring into Gracie's, he declared, "Not a goddamn thing, lady, and we're not going to until you sit down with the rest of us peons here so we can talk. You understand what I'm saying?" Gracie was surprised by Ben's eruption, but her demeanor didn't change. It was her brother-in-law and no one else in that room who she'd come to see. She glowered at Ben, who glared right back. I had to suppress a chuckle. The conflict on Garrett's face. He did look fearful, but there was a twinkle in his eye. He was glad to have an ally who would stand his ground.
"Gracie," he said, "I think you'd best sit down."
In answer, homing in on Ben, she demanded, "Does he have to be here?" Garrett grew more determined.
"He's the only man in this room who's qualified to deal with this kind of thing, Gracie. Now would you please sit down, so we can get on with things?"
Her lips tight together in a straight line, breathing loudly through her nose, she hesitated, then took a seat at the far end of the conference table near the whiteboard.
"You must understand," Garrett went on, "we work together at this firm. Ben Sagalowitz is a professional investigator. We'll be unable to do anything for you without him."
Glancing at me, he said,
"This is Forrest Spencer, who you already know about."
She knew about me, all right. In a trial the year before, I represented the defendant who was accused of murdering her husband.
"If we're going to be of any help, we're all going to have to get along. Unless you're willing to cooperate with us," Garrett said, "I'm going to have to tell you to look somewhere else."
Gracie gave no sign of having heard. Reaching inside her purse, she took out the photo and waved it at us. Less truculent, but still on the offensive, she said, "So, what have you found out? Is this my baby in this picture?" Garrett quickly passed the ball to Ben, who let out a long breath.
"Mrs. Parker, look, I only just found out about what you want us to do. I've been in Los Angeles on business. This is no snap operation you're talking about here. We haven't had time to discuss the thing, let alone do anything about it. I've got to tell you, personally, I think it's a wild goose chase. The little girl in that photograph you're holding could be just about any white female child with dark hair."
As Ben was speaking, Gracie's face was turning red. The aggressive look remained, but I could also see desperation there. By the grace of God, I thought, what state would I be in if our little Trina, who was also 9 years old, had been lost for over a year and someone told me where she might be? Gracie shot up from the chair, which toppled backwards on the floor. She took two steps forward and towered over Garrett. His hands came up as though to defend himself. Waving the photograph in his face, she growled, "What kind of a man are you to let me down like this? Barb promised me she'd get you straightened out. What do I have to do to get you going?" Ben had had enough. He stood up and was turning to leave the room when I put out my hand. "Hey, people," I said, "I think we're going about this in the wrong way." No startling revelation, but I had to say something to get the four of us back on track. Trying to placate Gracie and get Ben to stay, I added, "When I think about how I'd be if it was Trina instead of Divinity who was lost, I'd want you guys with me, so let's all settle down and see what we can do." Ben looked disgusted, then resigned as he sat down, and Garrett looked relieved. The only change in Gracie's hostile face were tears that she couldn't manage to blink back. In seconds, her rigid posture gone, Gracie slumped in a chair that Garrett had pulled out next to him. For a moment, no one spoke.
"Sorry if I was a bit rough there," Ben said. "I was up till 3 this morning working on a case."
He reached for the photograph that was face up in the middle of the table. I wondered how it had gotten there. Again, no one said anything while Ben studied it.
"The thing to do is to get to Georgia, where this picture comes from, and see if we can ID the girl."
Garrett immediately took up the thread.
"Ben, do we need to get anyone to give us a hand with this, or can you handle it alone?"
"I know some people in the FBI I can talk to, but for the first part of this, at least, we ought to be okay on our own."
Putting in my 2 cents, I said, We'll doubtless have to get our hands on some long-range photographic equipment that we don't have any of around here, won't we? The disdainful flicker on Ben's face as much as said I should stick to lawyering, and he'd do the investigative work. Garrett, more with relief than anything, was trying not to grin. It was Gracie's turn to speak.
Garrett, I'm sorry. I've been a total wreck since the email came. I've never gotten over Divinity's disappearance. The police, the FBI, they all think Divi's dead, but I know different. It's just something a mother knows. You won't understand. So when I got this picture on my computer, I knew it was her. That's all. That's why I need so much for you to get her back for me. Barb says you don't do this kind of work. Problem is, I don't trust anybody else, and that's God's truth. I can pay you anything you want, anything.
Gracie seemed to sag. She had little to say to us after that.
We'll keep costs to a minimum, Gracie, I said. You can be sure of that. We have no experience in this area, so right now we can't tell you much. We'll know more after Ben's had a chance to look into things.
Ben added,
it's probably best you not say anything to anybody about this for a while. If the child in this photograph is your daughter, we don't want whoever's got her to be scared off and go somewhere else because of something they read in a newspaper or see on TV, okay?
Gracie nodded.
I won't say anything. Not a thing.
Tears were running down her face. Standing up, she said,
thank you for helping me. Please bring her back to me if you can. I'll go now, if you don't mind.
We murmured our goodbyes as she left the room.
One thing's clear, anyway, Ben commented a moment later. There's no way we can do anything about that picture if that lady gets involved. We're going to have some strict ground rules to keep her out. Otherwise, she'll be in our hair every day until it's over.
Sounds good to me, Garrett said. I agreed.
Ben asked,
how's your wife about all this? Can we work with her instead of that sister of hers?
Thinking about Ben's question, heaving a long sigh, Garrett nodded and said,
unless actual decisions are involved, I think so. If it's just informational stuff, Barb can let us know. Gracie's opinionated and she's got a temper, but she's not stupid. And rules are something that woman understands. In fact, she thrives on them.
The less contact I have with that woman, the better, Ben said. As you guys saw, we didn't exactly hit it off. There's just no way I can work with her in person.
Okay, I said. Why don't I write up a couple of things and have you two take a look? Assuming we agree, you can take our conditions home to Barb and let her do the rest.
Garrett, his unflappable demeanor back, nodded enthusiastically.
I can tell you right now, Ben asserted. One more run-in with that woman, and I'm out.
I hear you, Garrett said. It'll help a lot to have our conditions written down. Gracie's hard-headed, but I think she'll go along.
Give me an hour or so to get a few ideas down, and I'll get back to both of you, I said.
I can't thank you guys enough for your support on this.
Garrett did look genuinely relieved. Sarah, our paralegal, had just left my office the following morning after a discussion on some research she'd done for me. Still breathing in the provocative fragrance she'd left behind, I was working to exercise thoughts that had no business in my head when Garrett tapped at my door and came in, Ben right behind him. Like a hound who'd caught the scent, Ben's head went up.
You let that girl in here, and then you close the door. What is it that you've got that I don't? It's sure not your pretty face.
Garrett and I laughed.
I'm sure Forrest was carrying on official business. Sarah's too shy to get close to him.
Ben guffawed.
Oh, right. The whole office knows that girl's got the hots for you.
Enough, enough, you guys,
I said as I closed my office door and the two sat down.
Well, Garrett informed us, looking at Ben, turns out it was your expostulation yesterday during our meeting that turned the trick. Let's say you're not one of Gracie's favorite people. As long as we find out who's in that photograph she has, she'll be happy to let her sister be the go-between.
See, guys, Ben proclaimed, a lesson for you on how to deal with bull-headed women like that.
A bemused expression on his face, Garrett said,
good stuff. Now I know who to send her to when she goes off the deep end. Anyway, Barb was good. She didn't read our conditions to her sister on the phone. She went to see her. It seems to have all worked out okay. Question is, where do we go from here? I haven't a clue about how to work with problems like this.
The same goes for me, I said. We looked at Ben, who'd taken out a pencil that looked as though two rats had used it for a game of tug-of-war. We waited while he nibbled for a moment, then removed the stub from his mouth and laid it down. To those who knew him well, this ritual was a sure sign that the wheels had begun to grind.
It's a little different from locating a missing husband or wife who's hiding with her lover somewhere, okay. But otherwise, looks like plain detective work to me. But I don't need to tell you guys this. Nothing's as simple as it seems. I've been thinking. I've got an old friend from years back when working with the NYPD. Me, that is, not her. She works, at least she used to, for the FBI. A lot of her cases involved kidnapped kids. If she's still working for the feds, and if she's still doing what she used to, she'll know all about Divinity, I'll guarantee. I'll give her a call and tell her what we're up to here, see what she says. It's a start, anyway.
Garrett and I agreed. I said, assuming for the moment that it is Divinity in the email the lady sent, couldn't you go to Georgia, Ben, to check it out? We know what school the child goes to. The lady put that in her note. That should be a help, shouldn't it?
Exactly what I was thinking, Garrett said.
Be less complicated if I could show the picture to teachers or somebody, but no can do. Not without running the risk of them calling up the parents.
Or the police, I added with a grin.
You ain't kidding. Especially if the picture turns out to be someone else, like I'm sure it is. You guys would have to put up some bucks to cut me loose. Fact is, school people get pretty cagey these days about strange men hanging around their grounds. Good reason, too. I'll just have to keep out of sight, that's all.
Ben's expression turned a little rueful. He cleared his throat.
That photographic equipment you were talking about, Forrest, seems I may need it after all. I wasn't thinking. I've got some stuff at home, but I don't know what shape it's in. Might have to pick up something along them lines.
After another go at his skeleton of a pencil, Ben said,
Still, things shouldn't be all that difficult. If it turns out, despite all, that we get hard evidence that it's the Parker child, things could get a little dicey.
Wouldn't the FBI come in if we found something? Garrett asked.
Ben made a face.
That's what I need to talk to my friend about. What it'll take to bring the feds in. There's politics and a whole lot of other crap involved. First off, they'll want to think that there's no way that some low-life PI finds a child they've been looking hard for going on 2 years. So unless we've got airtight evidence that they can't ignore, they won't listen. The way I see it, that's going to be our only real problem if we think it's her.
DNA results would surely give us what we need, I said.
You've been watching too many crime shows on TV. You need more than just a sample of DNA. You need to prove that the sample comes from the girl we want DNA from and how we got the sample. I don't know beans about this, but I do know that much. What I'm saying is, you need to be authorized to do this stuff.
Hold on a minute, I said. Let's say we get convincing evidence, but not enough for the FBI. Why couldn't we approach a federal judge in Georgia with what we had? Garrett shook his head.
I clerked for a federal judge way back when. I'm not at all sure they'd hear a petition like this. I nodded. That's something we'd have to look into, obviously.
Yeah, whatever, Ben said, waving dismissively. We're already crossing bridges we'll never come to. Let me talk to Cassie about this. She's the lady friend in the FBI I was talking about. And find out what she says. Assuming I can get a hold of her by then, can we get together tomorrow morning?
Garrett replied,
I've got a pre-trial appointment tomorrow morning at 9:30 with Vicky in Judge Thornton's court. I'll be in there 1.5 hours, max. 11:30 sound okay?
No good for me, I said. I've got to finish up a file with Sarah that she's been slaving over for 2 weeks. I doubt we'll be finished until after lunch. You guys free at 2?
Ben smirked. Yeah, well, be sure and keep your door closed. Wouldn't want any of the rest of us to know what's in that file, now would we?
Garrett said with just a trace of a smile.
2 will be just fine. Is that a little envy I hear, Ben?
I smiled as I turned onto our street. My wife Claire's car was in the driveway, which meant 2 things. Dinner for a hungry man would be on the table, and I'd have the pleasure of Claire's company when the twins were in bed. A pediatric surgeon at Socorro Hospital,
She was seemingly always on call, so it was usually the reverse. I cooked most of the time, and often didn't see my spouse until 9 or 10. Thank goodness it was better on the weekends. The ritual when I came through the door still hadn't changed. I wondered how long it would continue as child development and social pressures must eventually lure my girl and boy away. They were twins, but as different as 2 9-year-olds could be. Rambunctious Andy, still small but wiry and strong, sprang up to throw his arms around my neck. Trina, affectionate and quiet, not to be outdone, cleaved to my left arm. Near the kitchen of our large house, Andy dropped and scampered to the dinner table, while my daughter hung on until I reached my chair.
"Quite a fan club you've got there," commented Claire as she turned the oven off.
"Time for a spousal kiss?"
"Always, always,"
I answered as I reached for her. Claire's remark about my relationship with the children was well meant, though I thought there might be a little envy there somewhere. She was as devoted to her work as anyone I knew, but it didn't come without its cost. The fact that I and Lupe, our full-time sitter, saw more of our children than she did had its repercussions. As was our routine, Andy, then Trina, talked about their day. While our son focused on outdoors things, how many hits he'd had or how far he'd jumped in gym, his sister told us about what she'd done in her favorite classes and regaled us with gossip about her schoolmates. The second phase of these family evenings was getting 2 9-year-olds to finish, or in Andy's case, to start homework, followed up by baths, then bedtime stories. Claire and I would like to have taken turns, though it was I who cared for them 7 nights of 10. She'd been at Socorro for nearly 10 years and was fairly senior, neither attribute seeming to normalize her hours. Except occasionally during the week, and at times on weekends, the third period of our familial evenings, my time with Claire, didn't take place at all unless both of us were willing to stay up past 10. As long as we were getting on well and things were good, as was the case most of the time, both of us looked forward to sitting across from each other in our living room, drinks in our hands, to chat or sometimes read. It would be unfair of me, though, not to say more about my wife. She was a chameleon, my Claire. She was tall, about 5'10", an inch above me in her stocking feet. I asked her not to wear 3-inch heels. She wasn't like the señoritas south of the border, but she did have curves and a top that turned men's heads. She had wavy, dark blonde hair that, when worn down, went well past her shoulders. Her face was angular but nicely shaped, with light gray eyes. Why these details? Claire was the only woman I knew who was 3-in-1. When the notion took her and she dressed to look good, she was a knockout. At weddings and social events where there was music, she morphed from no-nonsense professional to unabashed coquette. I had to take my place in line to dance with her. A very different Claire if she met parents of children they had abused. She was intimidating and severe, there little attractive about her at such times. I'd seen her come at me like that more than once. Happily for us, she normally looked friendly and even warm, her ever-present teacup in her hand. She was smiling. "So," she asked, "was the meatloaf spicy enough this time?" Poor Trina's eyes were watering at dinner. "Did you notice?" "Honey, the meatloaf was fantastic, just the way I like it. I meant to tell you, I like your version better than what I do. You'll have to tell me what you put in it if you can remember." I doubted she could, since she found measuring spoons and cups a waste of time. A pinch of salt could range from several grains to a handful, so it seemed at times. "We'll see. It was too hot for Trina, I think, but that girl knows how you like it, and she adores you so much that she'll put up with just about anything to please you." Was there an edge in what she'd said? Not this time, no. I was about to ask her how her day went, when she said, "I got a call last night from Barb. Did you know that? You were in your study, so I picked up." Surprised, I told her no. I couldn't make much sense of what she said. Something about her sister, Gracie, and a meeting, and I don't know what. She wanted to remind you about tomorrow. What was she going on about? I took a generous sip from my glass of port, then set it down. "Ah, it's rather sad, Claire," I said. "Some lady on the East Coast thought she saw a girl who looked like someone she'd seen featured on a TV show a year or so ago on missing children. She was so sure of herself that she went back to the school where she saw the girl and got a picture, with her cell phone, I think, She went to the internet to look for pictures of children matching the one she had. She found the name of the parents and their address along with their email, and she sent a copy of the photo off to Gracie.
Surprised, Claire remarked, "That's wonderful, that's great. Why ever do you say sad?"
"Listen, my love, apparently the FBI received over 1,000 such leads and checked out every one. Some of the girls resembled Divinity, but that's all. The authorities have long since given the Parker girl up for dead or lost in a foreign country somewhere. I saw the picture. There's a similarity, but not much more. The chances of it being Divinity Parker are virtually nil." Gracie finally won her battle with the insurance company over Johnny's life insurance for nearly $500,000. She's ready to spend every cent to run down this lead. She's certain it's her daughter. Claire looked very somber.
"My God, I don't blame her. Wouldn't we do the same if...
"Yes, of course, darling, we would. But we'd hire qualified people to do the search."
"Well, naturally, isn't she?"
"Hardly. She's insisting that we do it, Garrett, Ben, and me."
"But that's crazy, Forrest. You can't possibly accept. You don't do that kind of work, do you?"
"No, Claire, we don't. The problem is, and we can't seem to change her mind, Gracie, the way she is, doesn't trust anybody else. She told her sister that if we refuse to help, she'll hire anybody she can find who'll agree to do it."
"But that's ridiculous. There are too many unscrupulous people out there. They'll take advantage of her and not come up with a thing."
"Now," I said, "you understand what we've been doing all day, battling it out with Gracie, then trying to find some reasonable way to help."
"My God, I'm so sorry, sorry for that poor woman and for your firm. Lord, it must be pure hell for Garrett, being so close, I mean."
"Hell it's been, I can tell you. He's a lot happier man since we've signed on."
"So you're going to check up on it? Who's in the picture, I mean?"
"Absolutely. That part shouldn't be difficult for a PI like Ben. It's what'll come after if it's really Divinity in the photo that'll get complicated."
Claire nodded. "I suppose," she reflected. "But the first thing is to find out if it's the Parker child. Wouldn't it be wonderful if it was? Every time I think about what happened to that little girl..."
"I know, sweetheart, believe me, I know. I feel the same. So for the moment, you're up to date. You know as much as we do." Both of us sat there. I finishing my port and Claire her tea. Each of us caught up in our own thoughts. Finally, Claire asked,
"Do you want to watch the news or go to bed?"
"Frankly, the latter sounds more inviting."
Claire smiled, put her teacup down on the end table, and headed for the stairs. I wasn't sure I'd ever seen her leave an unwashed dish in the living room at night. She obviously had other things on her mind.
Cheryl was in a snit. Apparently Sarah called at 9 but refused to leave a message. She said she was going to wait a half hour, then try again. At 9:30, minutes after I arrived at work, she called.
"If you're half as sick as you sound, Sarah, you did well to stay at home. The file can wait. And please, no details about how you spent your night. I feel ill already. Come in when you're over what you've got. And by the way, best not bypass Cheryl in the future. It's her job to know if someone's not coming in, okay?"
In a hoarse voice, punctuated by liquid coughs, Sarah said,
"I was worried about the case, that's all. I didn't want you to think..."
"Sarah, that's quite all right. I know how devoted to your work you are. As I said, the case we've been working on can be put on hold for a few days." Sick, the girl in her late 20s surely was, but the flu or whatever bug she had didn't prevent her from making a provocative noise that I'd heard many times before. Sarah was an outrageous flirt, unusually attractive, and doubtless accustomed to bringing men to heel. I doubted very much that it was my sex appeal that interested her. Rather, it had to be my disinclination to play her game that roused her. Garrett and I were in my office at 11:30. Ben joined us there 10 minutes after. We remained quiet while our partner perused his notes.
"I woke Cassie up last night. Forgot it was 3 hours later on the East Coast. Didn't piss her off, though. Good thing, too. Not one to mess with, that one. I didn't have to tell her much. She knows all about the Parker child. She didn't personally work the case, but some of the people in her special group did. She's still hanging in there with the FBI, and good news for us, she's still involved with missing kids. Fact is, that's all she does.
She's a member of the FBI's Child Abduction Rapid Deployment Team, CARD for short. She doesn't get her tail in a knot like a lot of the yahoos she works with do about who actually finds a child. I'd be lying to you, though, if I said she was enthusiastic about our chances. If the kid's alive at all, she says, she won't be in this country. Far too risky to leave her here. Cassie told me the team followed up over 1,500 leads since the girl disappeared, most of them during the first year. No reason not to check out what we have if the mother wants us to, she says. Ben's brow furrowed. Just like I thought, Cassie warns us to be very careful till we've got solid evidence it's the Parker girl. Garrett and I nodded, both of us aware of legal actions parents might take if they felt themselves harassed or their public image besmirched by incautious investigation. The good news, Ben went on, is if we get strong evidence, she'll pass it on to higher-ups. So, at least we're covered there.
That's great, Garrett said. How soon can you leave for Georgia?
Thinking out loud, Ben replied, Today's Tuesday, so how about Thursday morning? I'll have to buy a decent high-res camera and a lens or two. My stuff's too old. Tie up some loose ends here and pack? Yeah, Thursday ought to be okay.
Before I could get out my first word, Ben cut in.
Now, I don't have long legs like Garrett here, but I gotta tell you guys that flying ain't exactly my favorite thing. Fact is, I haven't been on a plane in over a half a dozen years. What I'm saying
is you want to go business class, I said. Right? Ben opened his mouth to object to my chiding tone, but Garrett raised a placatory hand.
I think we can spring for a comfortable seat and decent room and whatever Ben likes to eat as he's doing all the work. Don't you, Forrest?
Yeah, sure, why not, I said. Just don't get too distracted by Georgia peaches, Ben. I've heard they're quite tasty down there.
The ends of Garrett's mouth twitched.
Scowling, Ben replied, Least I've got an excuse for what I do when I work with women.
Tapping a thick file folder on my desk, I retorted,
So do I. Southern Bells aside, I'll tell Cheryl to get you the best routing to Bimington she can and to send you business class. Satisfied?
Sounds good. I know there's not all that much out of Santa Lucia to L.A., but I'd sooner get in late than be getting up at some ungodly hour in the morning.
I'll let Cheryl know. You may have to overnight it in Atlanta if there's nothing to Savannah that goes out late. I'll make sure Cheryl checks with you before she confirms the flights.
Yeah, do that, Garrett said. I'm so glad you're able to handle this for us, Ben. At least we'll be able to put Gracie's mind at rest that it's not her daughter in that picture. I fear she wouldn't believe it from anybody else.
Okay, guys. I'm off like a dirty shirt. I've got a shitload of stuff to do. I'm not looking forward to that plane.